What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Fancast Movies Podcast. My name is Eric Davis, and this is a podcast about movies, all things movies. Joining me, as always, every week, let me welcome him in to the podcast, is Mr. Sean O'Connell.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm doing okay. I'm looking at a bust of Rocket Raccoon and Groot that's coming out in September of 2014 that I need to own. These are two characters, of course. People probably, Rocket Raccoon and Groot, what?
I thought you were bragging that you had it already.
I don't have it. I want to have it. It's beautiful. This thing is beautiful. I'm looking at it online. But these two characters, these are characters in an upcoming movie. These could be, I think they're two of the most important characters of the year. And I think when we get to December rolls around and we're talking going over 2014, these may be two of the most memorable characters of the year, too. Of course, we're talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Marvel movie, hits theaters on August 1st. Just released the first trailer this week, did gangbusters. There was a story on The Wrap that on the social media bonanza that followed the release of this trailer, and that it did better than Man of Steel and The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which I find fascinating.
Well, I'm not surprised in that because Marvel has been sort of grooming the audience to realize that, you know, this was the trailer that they really needed to see because we're not intimately familiar with these characters yet. We don't know them the way we know Iron Man or Captain America or Thor, even someone like Spider-Man. The majority of people know who Spider-Man is. Nobody really knows who Guardians of the Galaxy, who the team members are, and what they're going to expect from this film. So it was really important for them to not hit a home run, but at least a solid double with this first trailer to give people an idea of the tone and what they're going to expect to see out of the movie. You know, a lot of us saw it in Hall H at Comic-Con, and we were sort of raving about it. But, you know, the people in middle America, you know, in Idaho, they have no idea. They're not sure who Chris Pratt is. They really don't know who Star-Lord is, and they have no idea why this raccoon is firing a machine gun. So it was vital that they connect with the mainstream crowd and let them know that this is going to be a lot of fun and something very, very different. Now, how different is I think, what's going to speak to how successful the movie ends up being.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree that they were grooming them because it was a smart – you know, Marvel's always really smart about the way they promote their films. And they did show us essentially the same trailer at Comic-Con. Blew up. Everybody was buzzing about it. And then we had these months of, are we going to see the trailer next month? Are we going to see it next week? Are we going to see it at the Super Bowl? I mean, this movie spawned more when are we going to see the trailer posts than I think any other movie of recent memory.
Well, and then Marvel,
we're always writing about it.
They tease us with like 15 seconds of it, you know, the morning of.
Yeah, well, that's a new thing.
It is. Now we're starting to see like Vine videos.
That was a good teaser though. That, like, in terms of 15 second teasers that you actually want to watch and you actually want to write about, that one was one of the better ones.
Oh yeah, definitely. And then what cracks me up is, as a counterpoint, in the exact same day, most of us on the East Coast go to bed exhausted from all the Guardians coverage, and we feel like we have a great handle on it. We wake up this morning, and Fox has revealed their Fantastic Forecast, like in the middle of the night on a Wednesday. Talk about not knowing how to handle a massive property. Like, they should have been, you know, building and building and building to this great reveal, and instead it's just like, oh yeah, by the way, we cast Fantastic Four. Like, you're basically telling us you don't care when you do that. But like, Marvel knows that they've got a great property on their hands, and they know how to handle it and how to get people excited for it instead of just dropping it on the internet in the middle of the night.
You know what really helps Marvel too is the fact that they have these other films arriving during the year that also serve to promote their future films. So when Thor the Dark World comes out, we're talking about Thor, but then Kevin Feige, who's kind of like their big guy over there, who kind of their chief, I call him the Marvel chief, Kevin Feige, he's talking about Guardians, he's talking about Captain America. So like, you're promoting five other movies for one movie, and then when Captain America comes out, guess what? He's going to be talking more about Guardians, and these stories are just spinning off of the promotion of that movie. And so it's like, there's just constant promotion all year round for everything that they do. And they're smart like that, that they make Kevin Feige as accessible as he is during the promotion of each movie, because they know that all these sites are going to ask him about every other movie. So it's smart. It's smart the way they do it. And yeah, the Fantastic Four, I mean, you mentioned it, so we kind of have to bring it up now. It was interesting how it was revealed in the middle of the night, but we kind of knew some of this, some of these names, and I don't know. I to be honest with you, I know people weren't crazy about the other Fantastic Four movies. I like Josh Trank. I like all four of these names. I think they're terrific actors, especially Kate Mara, who was in the shadow of her sister Rooney.
Right.
For a little bit, you know, Dragon Tattoo, all of a Social Network, all of a sudden Rooney Mara was the next big thing. And it's like, well, you know, here's Kate Mara, who had her little cameo in, what was it, Iron Man 2 as a reporter or something like that. And yeah. But then she kind of and she was sort of in the indie world. And I've been watching her on House of Cards. I think she's incredible on that show. Really, really powerful, strong female character. And so I'm really behind it. Now she gets to play with the big boys. So I'm excited. The Mara sisters, man.
Yeah, they're blowing up. Listen, I want to know how they're going to do the thing. You cast Jamie Bell, and you're going to tell me that he's going to become Ben Grimm. I need to see how that resolves itself.
I could see it. I could see Jamie. I could see Jamie Bell as a sort of angsty. He's going to be a more angsty thing.
Probably. Do I want that? Do
I don't know. That?
I want fun. Let's get back to Guardians, because Guardians looks like fun.
Let's get back to Guardians. Now, you know what's interesting about Guardians of the Galaxy is that this – I feel like this has the potential to change comic book movies, to be the most successful comic book movie, superhero movie with fans in 2014. And at the same time, it could be Marvel's least successful movie at the box office. Do you think that that's the path that we're kind of going on with this film?
It's getting close to doing that. Because what happens is there's only so many times that Marvel can continue to raise the bar on itself. You know, they're almost getting to the point where if they don't hit the $1 billion mark, it's a failure, which is a ridiculous thing to say. You know, Thor: The Dark World did really well by anyone else's standards, but it wasn't a smash hit because, you know, Iron Man 3 almost led the box office. I think it got passed by Catching Fire at the last minute. And then the Avengers obviously went over $1 billion. So Marvel needs to sort of dial back its expectations and realize what zone it's playing in, because Guardians, while it could very well be at the lower end of the performance scale, you know, in terms of the way that movies play over at Marvel, because they don't have, like, here's the thing. My wife watched Avengers, you know, she knew Downey, obviously she knew Chris Evans. She can get on board with those heroes. I can't sell her on Guardians. I just don't think that she's that interested in – I mean, I can point at a machine gun-toting raccoon and a tree character, but maybe that's a little more male brain, and I don't think it has the crossover appeal, even if you have Zoe Saldana, you know, decked head-to-toe in green. But it doesn't mean it might not be probably the most entertaining, fun, and original film that Marvel's going to offer us, and maybe that's going to have to be enough.
I think the more people talk about Star Wars in relation to Guardians of the Galaxy, the more it'll help that film, even though I know director James Gunn sort of steers away from that. He doesn't really want to talk Star Wars that much.
Well, that's a crazy comparison.
It is. But that's the comparison I make when I see this. And a lot of people will look at Chris Pratt as Star-Lord and they say he's got the swagger of Han Solo. And he does, you know. And I think Pratt would even admit that this character, if anything, is going to be a little bit – his performance at least will be inspired, I think, by Harrison Ford.
Well, if you misjudge it, then it's Remo Williams, you know, and that's terrible. Nobody needs that. So.
No, but I think James Gunn is a really smart filmmaker. He's kind of a guy that plays by his own rules. So he's a fun director for Marvel. And everything that he's said about this movie is that Marvel has allowed him to go there. Marvel has allowed him to take risks with this film that maybe the other movies haven't. Maybe because it's not as, you know, it'll tie into what's happening in the universe. But from everything that we've heard, Captain America: The Winter Soldier will tie directly to the Avengers, and Guardians of the Galaxy will be sort of this one-off that's just having fun. And I hope so.
I do too. Okay, so here are some questions that I have from having seen the footage now, because now we can actually talk about footage. Everything that we saw was still pretty limited to this one sort of prison set, you know? Like, how we saw Pratt's character sort of piloting a spaceship, but everything that we sort of saw was contained to this dark and grimy sort of location, mm-hmm. where you know the characters are going to be incarcerated. And then now we're able to like analyze the footage. Like John C. Reilly's character says that they arrested this whole group, you know, in some location. So is there going to be an adventure before that? How big is it going to get? Like we're starting in a world where they're already in space. So we don't have to get there. But I think everything we're going to learn about Star-Lord is that he was human at one point, or, you know, he is a human being and got himself into this scenario somehow. He has a Walkman, for God's sakes. He's got an 80s Walkman with the foam ears that you rest on top of your head and it plays a tape. And, you know, we're dating ourselves, but you and I probably each had those as kids. And so there are questions about these guys that I want answered, and the trailer didn't try to answer them yet. It just kind of said, hey, this is what we're going to do, but I think that there's still a lot of things that we need to figure out about what Guardians is going to try.
There are. I do know some of the answers to those questions, but I'm not really allowed to say what
they
are.
Set this it!
But, it is much larger than it is, than what they're showing. But yeah, the setup is that these are characters who are all meet each other in a prison situation, and I imagine that one of the film's first action sequences will involve them leaving that prison in some fashion and going off on an adventure that we do not we have not seen a lot from yet. But I think it's in good movies they tease you. This isn't a film that's all going to take place inside this prison, although it is a massive set from what I heard. It was a really, really cool set. You know, James Gunn has talked a little bit about that set.
From what I've heard. The embargoed is eating our podcast.
From what James Gunn has said in other publications. Right. But yeah, you know, there's a great little trail. He did a great trailer breakdown for Total Film that some other sites have picked up, where he took out certain pieces of the trailer and he said talked about them. And you know, for me, it's not so much the action sequences. For this film, it's the characters. He's talked lovingly at length about Rocket Raccoon and Groot, these two characters. And I think these two characters are going to be some of the most fascinating ones that we see on screen this year in any superhero movie that we've ever seen. And I'm really excited knowing the backstories for the both of them and where they come from and how they kind of get together. And the fact that Rocket is kind of this bad boy who's just sort of – and Groot is just kind of following him along. And I think there's going to be some of the film's most kick-ass moments and some of the film's most touching emotional moments – are going to come from these two characters. And I think they're the two most important characters that Marvel's ever debuted in a superhero movie. And I'm interested to see where they go. That's my connection. My connection is a little bit more emotional to the characters.
Here's a question. Because I wasn't quite sure. I got a 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. What a bunch of a-holes made me wonder, like, who is Marvel going after with this? With this film, you know, it's not necessarily the family crowd,
but that also taps back to what Gunn has said, is that this is a riskier Marvel movie. This is something that's like, you know, I want to put the guy giving the middle finger and somebody saying a-holes in the film's first trailer. That right there shows you, okay, yeah. this isn't a Marvel movie that, you know, this is a different sort of maybe a little bit one that's skewing a little bit older. And yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know who's it going to be for until we see the film, until we see more of it. You know, it'll be PG-13. It's not like we're going to say that you can't bring your kids to this. I don't know if you'll be able to bring your 5-year-old to this.
No, probably not.
But I think that the preteens are going to love it.
And I wonder too with Winter Soldier, you know, because we're hearing that it's like political conspiracy and, you know, in line with a 70s type thriller. I just wonder if Marvel's maturing themselves out, you know, if they're starting to get, you know, these were comic book movies for starters, you know, and everything's they're trying to grow with an audience. But I think they kind of can't forget that they have a young audience, too. It's just it's something to consider, something to keep in mind.
It's definitely something to consider. I mean, and they're with Disney now, and I think Disney's really smart about the way that they make movies. And I mean, hey, I had a lot of fun with Iron Man 3. I had a lot of fun with Thor: The Dark World. Yeah, they're maturing their movies, but I also feel like they're maintaining that quote-unquote fun aspect, why we really love them, why we love the Avengers. And if you look at the beginning of the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer, you see that. It's joking. It's fun. It's funny. You know, it's some guy steals his Walkman. And, you know, you could tell that Star-Lord's going to just be one of these guys. It's just cracking jokes left and right. And so you could still see the fun in that movie as well as the action. And I think as Marvel can keep balancing that correctly, they're going to keep making, you know, great movies.
Well, so. We hope so. Now we have to wait all the way until August until we see more of Guardians. Well, I'm sure we'll see some more footage as we get into. I wonder if they'll bring something splashy to Comic-Con.
I think we'll see something with Cap. With Captain America, the Winter Soldier, we'll probably see another little preview. Maybe they'll show 5 minutes before the movie or something like that. I think that would be really cool for fans if they did that. But yeah, Comic-Con.
The I don't want to see too much kind of thing too, you know? And that's always the tough juggle of you've already hooked us on it. We're a little bit sold. Don't oversell it now. You know, let us discover it in the movie. But that's just not possible
anymore. I always say that about, you know, we always say that. We're always coming up to a Marvel movie and we feel like, okay, this one's remained somewhat of a mystery. I was really happy with some of the twists in Iron Man 3 that none of them were revealed. You know, but then we get a month out from Captain America 2 and this week, you know, I've avoided them. I haven't read any of them, but I just see story after story. Is this the big spoiler in Captain America 2? Has Captain America 2 been spoiled by this? You know, and it's just like, really? Like, why can't we just calm down? Why do we rush?
I read those stories, and if it's true, the movie's been spoiled for me, unfortunately. Yeah, it's kind of ruined it a little bit, but what are you going to do? We're all going to go anyway.
Sean, we live in an age where everyone endlessly complains about spoilers as they're writing up about spoilers. It's just a weird time that we live in. But at the end of the day, you know what? It comes down to the movie. You could know every ounce of that movie, but it's still got to be entertaining, regardless of what you know. Yep. Some of my favorite movies of all time have big spoilers in them that I already know, but I can keep rewatching them because they're just awesome movies. Okay. So that's what it comes down to. But moving on, Mr. O'Connell, we do have movies arriving in theaters this week that aren't related to Marvel. We have 3 Days to Kill, mm-hmm. which is another movie in Costner's attempt to come back. Big Kevin Costner comeback. Kevin Costner has been in a few movies. Jack Ryan, 3 Days to Kill. We saw him in Draft Day.
It feels like Hollywood's attempt to also cash in on the Liam Neeson Taken formula. Like, it's yet another film that steals from this, you know, veteran actor, got some ruggedness to him. We're going to watch him kick some ass in a European city. I mean, until that formula stops working, they're going to keep trying it.
So this isn't the Costner-essence?
I mean, it still could be, but people didn't really respond to Jack Ryan at all, and so now we have to kind of wait for Draft Day. I think it's great that he's back working again, and I'm sad that he took as much time off as he did, but are these the movies that I want him to come back and make? You know, not necessarily, no. I'm ready for him to get back to finding the next Dances with Wolves.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk – what is his best role? What movie do you want to see him come back and make, or not movie come back and make again, but a sort of performance – from a Kevin Costner movie, like, yeah, I want to see this Kevin Costner.
Mine is, without fail, Open Range. And Open Range, to me, is the kind of movie that Kevin Costner wants to make. It's the kind of story that I think he would love to keep telling over and over again. Because when he's at his best, he's out on a frontier talking about stories that happened in that time frame. Hatfield and McCoy was, you know, it's right up that alley. Silverado, where he got his start. You talk about someone who tried to, you know, whether he wanted to or not, that's the closest to a sort of wise-ass, you know, off-the-cuff Han Solo-type character. He steals Silverado when he was in his prime. But Open Range is just a balance of amazing Western stereotypes put into a really human story, and just the gorgeous shots of the frontier country that we think is gone. Costner finds some way to you know, dig it up and tap into it and film it beautifully multiple times. And so people point to Dancing with Wolves. I thought Open Range was a better example of it. And I think that he has, you know, 10 or 15 more stories like that in his, you know, up his sleeve that he could make as a director. He could put himself in it if he wants to. It's a timeless genre, and he knows how to work in it.
So you're not a fan of the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves sequel?
I'm not saying that that's a bad movie necessarily, but I'd rather see Costner in that than, you know, recycled Euro thrills because Liam Neeson's doing it.
You know, I'd like to see Costner in an adult romantic drama, something that kind of where he can chew a little bit more and be a little bit of everything that we've seen. You know, Bull Durham is one of my favorite Kevin Costner movies. Tried to attempt some of that more in Tin Cup. But, I like Bull Durham. I think that's, you know, it's got a little bit of everything for everyone. It's got a little bit of baseball. It's got a little bit of Kevin Costner as kind of a tough guy. But then also it's got the romance. You know, I feel like Draft Day, I watched Draft Day, and it had some of that. But it just seeing Draft Day reminded me of how much I liked Bull Durham and those kinds of performances from him.
Well, and have you seen The Upside of Anger with Joan Allen?
I have not.
Oh, God, that might be – well, I just said Open Range, so I have to sort of backtrack.
You can't use –
It is one of my favorite Costner performances. It is exquisite. She plays this – she's the mom of these daughters, and she's – deeply depressed and really angry at the way her life has turned out, and he's a guy who sort of wanders into her life and says, like, I'm not taking your BS. And it's amazingly scripted performances for these two wonderful actors, and when Costner gets material like that, he's great. So
yeah, like I look at Enough Said, with James Gandolfini, you know, it's such a great adult romantic kind of dramedy. And more comedy than drama, but I'd love to see something like that from Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
Is it like something like an Enough Said? And I hope the success of Enough Said, because I do think it was a successful, I hope that spawns more adult romantic dramedies, comedies, because I feel like adults need, you know, adults still are in romances as Sean's blinging.
My computer's going off the hook. Everybody agrees with Kevin Costner, apparently.
It is crazy.
Telling me how
you are just playing that to the bone.
So, but I got this.
I want to have the, you know what, the rest of my conversation with you, I'm just going to use titles from Kevin Costner movies. So I want you to go and be the dragonfly, because rumor has it that Mr. Brooks is the guardian of the company men.
I was able to interview Costner on the set of the Jack Ryan movie, and he says that he has a bunch of screenplays that he's sort of tinkering around. Like, he's a Renaissance man, Costner. Just give him a budget, Hollywood. You know, let him do what he does. And for a long time, it worked. He was one of the biggest stars on the planet when he was trading blows with De Niro and Sean Connery in The Untouchables. Who was bigger than that at that point? So I think he deserves another shot, multiple shots.
Maybe a Renaissance Man reboot? Or does Danny DeVito get pissed off? You know what? We have a few minutes left, Sean. The other movie opening this week is Pompeii. Here we go. Paul W.S. Anderson. Oh, he has his fans. A disaster movie. I love the poster. It's like these two kids making out as like this volcano just comes crashing and destroying their world, because that's exactly what was happening. I've actually been to the real Pompeii. I don't know if you've ever been to Pompeii.
I never have.
When I was a kid, I did the whole backpacking through Europe. We did it in Italy, and we toured off from Naples for a day and went over to Pompeii. And it's kind of a really freaky place to visit. You know, you can walk around, and they have like these little areas where literally they had people that were just frozen in stone, and they like corded them off, and they have glass around them.
What?
And so you can walk past like, oh, this used to be a building, this used to be a bathhouse, oh, here's a little glass container where you can see some citizens that are still trapped in stone.
They're people
yes, like people like with their mouths open like screaming as the lava, like,
get out of here.
It's a freaky place, dude. I'm telling you, I mean, this is years ago, but I'm sure it's still the same. It is a freaky place.
That's insane.
Yeah, but like they have that at the real Pompeii if you ever go visit. But yeah, so here we go. This is a retelling of that story.
That is more interesting than the actual movie, I'm sure.
They should do a documentary. I'm sure there is. You could probably go on YouTube and find tourist videos of the actual Pompeii. And I'm surprised nobody else has done a story. We're going to see this on Cinema Blend, folks, in about 25 minutes. Videos from the real Pompeii. But yeah, you know, this is a retelling of that. It's a disaster movie. So in the 2.5 or so minutes that we have left, you tell me, if somebody sees Pompeii, they say, "Ooh, I'm in the mood to watch more disaster movies." What do you think's the best disaster movie?
I guess I have to go with Roland Emmerich. You cannot not go with Roland Emmerich.
Just him himself?
Him himself.
He's the best disaster movie.
His filmography. If I were to choose one of his, I'll go with 2012. That was so gonzo.
Really? 2012 is your pick for the best disaster movie? when you have movies like Armageddon.
No, that's not a disaster.
And Independence Day.
That's not a disaster movie. I'd argue that these are not disaster movies.
Armageddon is not a disaster movie?
No, it's guys on an asteroid. How is that a disaster?
Preventing a worldwide disaster.
If it actually hit, then I would probably say that it would qualify as that. A disaster movie to me is something like Towering Inferno or Earthquake, like from the 70s. I don't think the dueling volcano movies that we got back in the day, and I'm not going with Dante's Peak, nor am I going with the Tommy Lee Jones movie where he romanced Anne Heche, even though she now prefers the company of a woman. So I'm going with a traditional disaster movie where, like, real disasters happen, and that's, to me, it's 2012. You got John Cusack in a limousine racing a seismic event. How can you not appreciate everything that has to do with that?
You have to. Titanic? Is Titanic a disaster movie?
Yeah, I guess that would qualify.
Right? Poseidon Adventure? Are these
Poseidon disasters? Adventure. Yeah, something like the Poseidon Adventure would probably qualify. I keep saying the Towering Inferno. That seems to me like a disaster movie.
Yeah.
But is it really? That's just like a fire in a building.
What about disaster movie, The Parody?
But that's not good,
a spoof movie.
Yeah, I mean, it would count, sure. But I don't think it's good. What are you going with? What's your choice?
I mean, it depends. You know, like I've seen like okay, Box Office Mojo, disaster movies.
Right.
They say Gravity's a disaster movie.
No, that's crazy.
War of the Worlds. I mean, so these alien invasion movies.
War of the Worlds might qualify.
I like War of the Worlds.
If stuff gets messed up really bad, then I think it's a disaster movie.
Deep Impact.
Yeah. See,
not
like
deep
that.
Impact.
Well, but that's the same problem with Armageddon.
No, Deep Impact. There is a Deep Impact in Deep Impact. I remember the wave.
It lived up to its title.
Yeah, no, there is a Deep Impact. Remember when the wave comes and they're all like, you're trying to, and who is that? Hugging at the beach.
Lily Sobieski. And...
No, it wasn't. It was what's her name?
It wasn't. I thought it was
married to David Duchovny. Wasn't it her?
Was that Tia Leone?
Yeah, was it that Tia Leone, Deep Impact?
No.
I am so...
Hold on. Now I got to check. I know that Morgan Freeman was the president in that one.
Yes, Deep Impact. And that's the one, aren't they, when they're hugging on the beach and the wave comes over. This is how much research we do before...
No, these are better. Doing it on the fly is better. Taya Leone, you're exactly.
Yeah, I am. I know my Taya Leone movies, dude.
You're right.
I know my Taya Leone movies. Yeah, and she's hugging her father.
She peaked at Bad Boys for me.
She peaked at Bad Boys.
Lily Sobieski's in it also, though.
She is in it. She's like the teenage girl. And that scene, they're getting away from the wave. They're like climbing on top of station wagons to get away from the wave. Because remember, like, there's that – the U.S. has built an underground bunker and, like, only, like, 15 people can go in it. And so everybody's rushing the bunker.
All right. See, now with all of this discussion, I've come over to Pacific Rim. Can I go with Pacific Rim?
I guess Pacific Rim. Yeah, I guess that's a disaster movie. I don't know. Box Office has Hard Rain on there as a disaster movie.
We should have defined this category before
the world's
we
end.
Discussion.
Alive, I guess. Alive is kind of a disaster. People
for the guys in the wreck, it
yeah,
was. Yes.
For those people, it was a disaster. But they also have Independence Day on there, and that would be mine. If Independence Day is allowed, that would be my disaster movie. And you know what? Cities get blown up in that. New York gets torched. And I would consider that a disaster, that New York City getting completely blown up. The White House is blown up. That's kind of a disaster.
True. Duly noted.
That's okay. What I'm going with.
I'll allow it.
Sean, with 30 seconds left, say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks so much for listening. 3 Days to Kill, Pompeii. Those are your movies in theaters. My name is Eric Davis. His name is Sean O'Connell. Enjoy. Please enjoy your weekend at the movies.